perfect, and her back straight. But her face was blotchy, like she'd been crying. Aaron's eyes were troubled.
"What happened with the sand was my fault," Tamara said. "I'm sorry. I'm sorry I got you in trouble. I'm sorry I suggested something so dangerous in the first place. And I'm sorry I didn't say something sooner."
Call shrugged. "I asked you to come up with an idea, any idea. It wasn't your fault." She gave him a strange look.
"But I thought you were mad."
Aaron nodded in agreement. "Yeah. We thought you were angry with us. You didn't say practically anything for 3 whole weeks.
"No,"
Cole said. "You didn't say anything to me for 3 whole weeks. You guys were the ones who were mad." Aaron's green eyes went wide.
"Why would we be mad at you? You got in trouble with Rufus, we didn't. You didn't blame it on us, even though you could have."
"I'm the one who should have known better," said Tamara,
gripping her cup so hard her knuckles turned white.
"You two hardly know anything about magic, about the magisterium, about elements. But I do, my older sister."
"Kimaya?" asked Call, puzzled. His leg was aching. He perched himself on the coffee table, rubbing his knee through his cotton uniform.
"I had another sister,"
Tamara said in a whisper.
"What happened to her?"
Aaron asked, his voice hushing to match hers.
"Worse," said Tamara. "She became one of those things I was telling you about. A human elemental. There are these great mages who can swim through the earth like they're fish, or make stone daggers shoot out from walls or bring down lightning strikes, or make giant whirlpools. She wanted to be one of the great ones, so she pushed her magic until she got taken over by it."
Tamara shook her head, and Cole wondered what she was seeing as she told them about this.
"The worst part is how proud my dad was of her at first, when she was succeeding. He would tell Kimaya and me how we should be more like her. Now he and my mother won't talk about her at all. They won't even say her name."
"What is her name?"
Cole asked. Tamara looked surprised.
"Ravan."
Aaron's hand hovered in the air for a second, like he wanted to pat Tamara on the shoulder but wasn't sure if he should.
"You're not going to wind up like her," he said. "You don't have to worry."
She shook her head again.
"I told myself that I wouldn't be like my father or my sister. I told myself I would never take any chances. I wanted to prove I could do everything the right way and not cut a single corner. And I would still be the best. But then I did cut corners. And I taught you how to cut them too. I didn't prove anything."
"Don't say that," said Aaron. "You proved something tonight."
Tamara sniffed.
"What?"
"That Jasper looks better with pudding in his hair," Call suggested. Aaron rolled his eyes.
"That's not what I was going to say.
Although I sure wish I'd seen it. It was pretty great," Call said, grinning.
"Tamara, you proved that you care about your friends. And we care about you. And we'll make sure you don't cut any more corners."
He looked over at Call.
"Won't we?"
"Yeah," said Call, studying the toe of his boot, not sure he was the best person for this assignment.
"And Tamara?"
She scrubbed the corner of her eye with her sleeve.
"What?"
He didn't look up, and he could feel the heat of embarrassment creep up his neck and make his ears pink.
"No one's ever stuck up for me. Like you guys did tonight."
"Did you actually say something nice to us?"
Tamara asked him.
Are you feeling okay?
I don't know, Cole said. I might need to lie down. But Cole didn't lie down. He stayed up talking with his friends for a good part of the night. Chapter 10. By the end of the first month, Cole didn't care if he was about to get creamed by the other apprentices in whatever trial they were going to do, so long as it meant no more room of sand and boredom. He sat listlessly in a triangle with Aaron and Tamara, sorting the light and dark and lightish and darkish piles, as if they'd been doing it for a million years. Aaron tried to start a conversation, but Tamara and Cole were too bored to talk in more than grunts. But sometimes now they all looked at one another and smiled, the secret smiles of actual friendship. Exhausted friendship, but real friendship nonetheless. At lunchtime, the wall opened, but for a change it wasn't Alex Strike. It was Master Rufus, and he was carrying in one hand what looked like a massive wooden box with a trumpet sticking out of it, and in the other, a bag of something colorful.
"Continue as you were, children," he said, setting the box down on a nearby rock.
Aaron boggled.
"What is that?"
he whispered to Cole.
"A gramophone," said Tamara, who was still sorting sand, even as she stared at Rufus. "It plays music, but it works with magic, not electricity."
At that moment, music blasted from the trumpet of the gramophone. It was very loud, and not anything Cole recognized immediately. It had a thumping, repetitive sound that was incredibly annoying. "Isn't that the Lone Ranger theme song?" Aaron asked.
"It's the William Tell Overture,"
Master Rufus shouted over the music, capering around the room.
"Listen to those horns. Get your blood pumping. Ready for doing magic."
What it did was make it really, really, really hard to think. Cole found himself straining to concentrate, which made it a challenge to get a single grain up into the air. Just when he thought he had the sand under control, the music would soar, and his focus would scatter. He made a noise of frustration, and opened his eyes to see Master Rufus opening the bag and pulling out a beet-red worm. Cole seriously hoped it was a gummy worm, since Master Rufus started chewing one end of it. Cole wondered what would happen if instead of trying to move the sand, he concentrated on smashing the gramophone against the cave wall. He looked up and saw Tamara glaring at him.
"Don't even think about it," she said,
as though reading his mind. She looked flushed, her dark hair sticking to her forehead as she struggled to concentrate on the sand despite the music. A bright blue worm hit Cole in the side of the head, causing him to spill his airborne sand all over his lap. The worm bounced to the ground and lay there.
"Okay, it's definitely a candy worm," Cole thought, since it didn't have any eyes and looked gelatinous.
On the other hand, that described a lot of things in the magisterium.
"I can't do this,"
Aaron panted. He had his hands raised, sand spinning. His face was red with concentration. An orange worm bounced off his shoulder. Rufus had the bag open and was throwing handfuls of worms.
"Gah!"
Aaron said. The worms didn't hurt, but they really were startling. There was a green one stuck in Tamara's hair. She looked near tears. The wall opened again. This time it was Alex Strike. He had a bag with him, and an odd, almost malicious grin split his face as he looked from Rufus, still hurling worms, to the apprentices, struggling as hard as they could to concentrate.
"Come in, Alex,"
said Rufus cheerfully,
Leave the sandwiches just over there. Enjoy the music.
Cole wondered if Alex was remembering his own Iron Year. He hoped Alex wasn't visiting any of the other apprentice groups, ones that were learning cool things with fire or levitation. If Jasper found out any details of what Cole had to do today, he would never stop mocking him. It doesn't matter, Cole told himself sternly. Concentrate on the sand. Tamara and Aaron were moving grains, rolling them and pulling them through the air, slower than before, but they were in the zone, working even when they were smacked in the back of the head with a gummy worm. Tamara now had a blue one tangled up in a braid and didn't even seem to notice. Cole closed his eyes and focused his mind. He felt the damp, cold smack of a worm on his cheek, but this time he didn't let the sand fall. The music pounded in his ears, but he let all of that slide away, one grain after another at first, and then, as his confidence grew, more and more sand. That'll show Master Rufus, he thought. Another hour went by before they took a break to eat their lunch. When they started up again, the mage bombarded them with waltzes. As his apprentices sorted sand, Rufus sat on a boulder and did a crossword. He didn't seem bothered when they went hours over their time and missed dinner in the refectory. They tramped back to their rooms, tired and dirty, to discover food laid out for them on the table in the common room. Cole found that he was in a surprisingly good mood, considering, and Aaron made him and Tamara crack up over dinner with his impression of Master Rufus waltzing with a worm. The next morning, Master Rufus showed up at their door just after the alarm, carrying armbands that would distinguish their team during the first test. They all yelled in excitement. Tamara yelled because she was happy. Aaron yelled because he liked it when other people were happy. And Cole yelled because he was sure they were going to die.
Do you know what kind of test it's going to be? Tamara asked, eagerly winding the armband around her wrist. Air, fire, earth, or water? Can you give us a hint? Just like a tiny little itty-bitty...
Master Rufus looked sternly at her until she stopped talking.
No apprentices are given advance knowledge of how they are to be tested, he said. That would confer an unfair advantage. You must win on your own merits.
Win? Cole said, startled. It hadn't occurred to him that Master Rufus was expecting them to win the test. Not after a whole month of sand. We're not going to win. He was mostly concerned with whether they would survive. That's the spirit. Aaron hid a grin. He was already wearing his armband just above his elbow. Somehow he managed to make it look cool. Cole had tied his around his forearm and was fairly sure it looked like a bandage. Master Rufus rolled his eyes. It worried Cole that the corners of his mouth twitched up in an involuntary smile, as though he was actually starting to understand Master Rufus's expressions and responding to them. Maybe by the time they were in their silver year, Master Rufus would communicate complicated theories of magic by the lifting of a single, bushy eyebrow.
"Come along," the mage said.
With a dramatic swoosh, he spun around and led them out the door and through what Cole was starting to think of as the main corridor. Phosphorescent moss flashed and sparkled as they went. Down a spiral stair that Cole had never seen before, into a cavern. At his other school, he'd always wanted to be allowed to play sports. At least here, they were giving him a chance. Now it was his job to keep up. The cavern was the size of a stadium, with massive stalactites and stalagmites jutting up and down like teeth. Most of the other Iron Year apprentices were there, with their masters. Jasper was talking to Celia, gesturing wildly at the stalagmites in one corner, which had grown together in a complicated loop shape. Master Milagros hovered slightly above the ground, encouraging one of the kids to hover with her. Everyone was moving with restless energy. Drew looked especially on edge, whispering with Alex. Whatever Alex was saying, Drew didn't look happy about it. Walking farther into the room, Cole glanced around, trying to anticipate what might happen. Along one wall was a large cave that appeared to have bars in front of it, like a cage made of calcite. Looking at it, Cole worried that the test was going to be even scarier than he'd imagined. He rubbed his leg absently and wondered what his father would say.
"This is the part where you die."
Probably. Or maybe it was an opportunity to show Tamara and Aaron that he was worth sticking up for.
"Iron Year apprentices,"
Master North said as a few more students trickled in after Master Rufus.
"I give you your first exercise. You are going to fight elementals."
Hushed gasps of dread and excitement spread around the room. Cole's spirits plunged. Were they kidding? None of the apprentices were prepared for that, he was willing to bet. He looked to Aaron and Tamara to see if they disagreed. They had both gone pale. Tamara was gripping her armband. Cole frantically tried to remember the lecture Master Rockmaple had given them two Fridays back, the one on elementals.
"Dispersing rogue elementals before they can cause harm is one of the important tasks mages are responsible for," he'd said. "If they feel threatened, they can disperse back into their element. It takes them a lot of energy to coalesce again."
So all they had to do was scare the elementals.
Great.
Master North furrowed his brow as though he'd just noticed that the students looked concerned.
"You'll do fine," he assured them.
This struck Cole as unearned optimism. He imagined them all lying dead on the floor while wyverns bent on revenge swooped overhead, with Master Rufus shaking his head and saying,
"Maybe the apprentices will be better next year."
"Master Rufus," Cole hissed, trying to keep his voice down, "we can't do this. We didn't practice."
"You know what you need to know,"
said Rufus, cryptically. He turned to Tamara.
"What do the elements want?"
Tamara swallowed.
"Fire wants to burn," she said. "Water wants to flow. Air wants to rise. Earth wants to bind. Chaos wants to devour."
Rufus clapped a hand down on her shoulder.
"You three think about the five principles of magic, and about what I taught you, and you'll do fine."
With that, he strode away to join the other mages on the far side of the room. They'd shaped the rocks into seats and were lounging there in apparent comfort. Some other mages were coming in behind them. There were a few other older students, too, along with Alex, the cave light glinting off their bracelets. That left the Iron Year apprentices in the middle of the room as the lights dimmed, until they were surrounded by darkness and silence. Slowly, the apprentice groups started to shuffle together into a single large mass, facing the portcullis as it opened up into the unknown. For a long moment, Cole stared into the dark beyond until he started to wonder if anything was there. Maybe the test was to see if the apprentices actually believed the mages would do something as ridiculous as letting 12-year-olds fight wyverns in gladiatorial combat. Then he saw shining eyes in the gloom. Great, clawed feet crunched through the dirt, as three creatures emerged from the cave. They were as tall as two men and stood on their back legs, bodies hunched over, dragging spiked tails behind them. Vast wings beat the air where arms might have been. Wide, toothy mouths snapped at the ceiling. All Call's father's warnings beat inside his head, making him feel like he couldn't breathe. He was more scared than he could remember being before. All the monsters of his imagination, every beast that hid in closets or under beds, was dwarfed by the nightmares that clawed hungrily toward him.
Fire wants to burn,
Call thought to himself.
Water wants to flow. Air wants to rise. Earth wants to bind. Chaos wants to devour. Call wants to live.
Jasper, apparently possessed of an entirely different feeling about his own survival, broke away from the huddle of the apprentices and, with a great howl, ran directly toward the wyverns. He lifted his hand and thrust it, palm out, toward the monsters. A very small ball of fire shot from his fingers, flying past one of the wyvern's heads. The creature roared in fury, and Jasper balked. He thrust out his palm again, but now only smoke rose from it, no fire at all. A wyvern stepped toward Jasper, opening its mouth, thick blue fog pouring from its jaws. The fog curled through the air, slowly, but not so slowly that Jasper was able to evade it. He rolled to one side, but the fog blew over him, surrounding him. A moment later, he was rising through it, floating up like a soap bubble. The other two wyverns sprang into the air.
"Oh, crap!" said Call. "How are we supposed to fight that?"
Rage flashed across Aaron's face. "It's not fair!" Jasper was yelling now, bobbing back and forth on the plumes of wyvern breath. Lazily, the first wyvern batted at him with its tail. Call couldn't suppress a spark of pity. The other apprentices stood frozen, staring upward. Aaron took a deep breath and said, "Here goes nothing." As Call and the others watched, he dashed forward, throwing himself at the closest wyvern's tail. He managed to catch it on the downstroke, and the wyvern let out a cry of surprise that sounded like a thunderclap. Aaron clung on grimly as the tail swung around, tossing him up and down as if he were riding a bucking bronco. Jasper, in his bubble, rose up and bobbled around at the ceiling among the stalactites, yelling and kicking out with his legs. The wyvern cracked its tail like a whip, and Aaron went flying. Tamara gasped. Rufus flung out a hand and flecks of ice crystals shot from it, coming together in midair, forming a hand-like shape that caught Aaron inches from the floor and then froze that way. Call felt a burst of relief in his chest. He hadn't realized until that moment how much he'd been worried that the masters wouldn't lift a hand to help them, that they'd just let them die. Aaron struggled against the fingers, trying to get free. A few of the other Iron Year apprentices moved together in a pack, advancing toward the second wyvern. Gwenda made fire spark between her hands, blue as the flame on the lizards' backs. The wyvern yawned at them lazily, sending out slow tendrils of breath. One by one they began to rise through the air, shouting. Celia shot out a blast of ice as she rose. It missed, striking just to the left of the second wyvern's head, making it roar.
Call!
He whirled around at Tamara's urgent whisper, just in time to see her dive behind a thicket of stalagmites. Call started to move after her, only to stop at the sight of Drew standing, frozen, off to the side of the group. Call wasn't the only one who noticed. The third wyvern, eyes narrowed in a predatory yellow glare, curled around to face the frightened apprentice. Drew flung both his arms down, palms facing the ground, as he muttered frantically. Then he rose slowly off the ground, lifting himself to the wyvern's eye level.
"He's mimicking being hit by the smoke," Call realized. "Smart."
Drew called up a ball of wind into his hand and aimed. The wyvern snorted in surprise, breaking Drew's concentration and pinwheeling him in the air. Not wasting any time, the wyvern darted its head forward and snapped its beak, catching the very edge of Drew's trouser leg. The cloth ripped as Drew kicked the air frantically. Call rushed forward to help, just as the second wyvern swooped down from the cavern ceiling, straight toward him.
"Call, run!"
Drew yelled.
"Go!"
It was a good suggestion, Call thought, if only he could run. His weak leg twisted as he tried to dart away over the uneven ground, and he stumbled, righting himself quickly, but not quickly enough. The cold black eyes of the wyvern were focused on him, its talons extended as it grew closer and closer. Call broke into a shambling run, his leg aching as he thumped his foot down against the rock. He wasn't fast enough. Looking over his shoulder, he tripped and went flying, slamming against gravel and sharp stone. He rolled over onto his back. The wyvern reared up over him. Some part of Call was telling him that the masters would step in before anything too serious happened, but a much bigger part of him was howling with fear. The wyvern seemed to take up his whole field of vision, its jaws opening, revealing a scaly maw and sharp teeth. Call flung out his arm. He felt a burst of dull heat explode around him. A wave of sand and rock cascaded up from the ground, hammering against the wyvern's chest. The beast flew back and was knocked hard against the cave wall before slumping to the ground. Call blinked, pushing himself slowly to his feet. When he was up, he looked around with new eyes.
"Oh,"
he thought, seeing the mayhem unfolding all over the room, the fire streaking past and kids spinning in circles as they lost their concentration and their magic tossed them from side to side. He understood, all at once, why they'd been practicing in the sand room for so long. Against all odds, magic had become automatic to him. He knew the concentration it needed. His wyvern was struggling to its feet, but now Call was ready. He focused, throwing his hand out, and three stalactites cracked free, slamming down and pinning the wyvern to the ground by its wings.
"Ha!"
said Call. The beast opened its beak, and Call moved to retreat, knowing he wouldn't be fast enough to avoid the monster's breath.
"Give me Miri!"
Tamara yelled, coming from the shadows.
"Quick!"
Reaching for his belt, Call pulled out the knife and tossed it to her. The wyvern's mouth was open, smoke just beginning to curl out. With two quick strides, Tamara walked through the smoke to the wyvern and moved to stab the blade through the wyvern's eye. Just as it was about to hit, the monster disappeared in a great gust of blue smoke, returning to its element with a howl of rage. Tamara began to float upward. Call grabbed her leg. It was a little bit like holding the string of a balloon, since she continued to bob in the air. She grinned down at him. She was smudged all over with dirt and sand, her hair loose and tumbling around her face.
"Look,"
she said, gesturing with Miri, and Call turned in time to see Aaron, free of the ice, sending a flood of small rocks toward a wyvern. Celia, from her perch, rained down more stones. In the air,
they became a massive boulder that dispersed the creature with a single strike before it crashed into rubble against the far wall.
"Only one more," Call said, panting.
"No more," Tamara told him gleefully. "I got two. Although, I mean, you did help a little with the second."
"I could just let you go right now."
Call tugged on her leg threateningly.
"Okay, okay, you helped a lot."
Tamara laughed, just as the room broke into applause. The masters were clapping, looking, Call realized, at him and Tamara and Aaron and Celia. Aaron was breathing hard, glancing from his hands to the place where the wyvern had disappeared, as if he couldn't believe he'd thrown a boulder. Call knew how he felt.
"Whee!"
said Tamara, waving her arms up and down as she bobbed. A moment later, the apprentices who had floated up to the ceiling were slowly floating down, Call letting go of Tamara's ankle so she could land on the floor, feet first. She handed Miri back to him as the other apprentices landed. Some laughing, some, like Jasper, silent and grim-faced. Tamara and Call made their way toward Aaron among the hubbub of voices. People were cheering and clapping them on the backs. It was a little like what Call had always imagined winning a basketball game would be like, though he'd never won one. He'd never even played for a team.
"Call,"
said a voice behind him. He turned to see Alex, a big grin on his face.
"I was rooting for you guys," he said.
Call blinked.
"Why?"
It wasn't as if they'd talked much, or at all.
"Because you're like me, I can tell."
"Yeah, right," Call said.
Well, that was ridiculous. Alex was the kind of guy who, back home, would have been pushing Call into a mud puddle. The Magisterium was different, but it couldn't be that different.
"I didn't really do much anyway," Call went on. "I just stood there until I remembered to run, except then I remembered that I can't run."
He saw Master Rufus circling through the crowd to approach his apprentices. He wore a small smile, which, for Master Rufus, was like leaping and cartwheeling down the hallways. Alex grinned.
"You don't need to run," he said. "Here, they'll teach you how to fight, and trust me, you're going to be good at it."
Call, Tamara, and Aaron went back to their rooms feeling that, for the first time since they'd gotten to the Magisterium, everything was falling into place. They'd done better than all the other apprentice groups, and everyone knew it. Best of all, Master Rufus had gotten them pizza. Real pizza from a cardboard box with melty cheese and lots of toppings that weren't lichen or bright purple mushrooms or anything else weird that grew underground. They ate it in the common room, friendly fighting over who got the most pieces. Tamara won by eating the fastest. Cole's fingers were still a little greasy as he pushed open the door to his bedroom. Full from pizza and soda and laughing, he felt the best he had in a long time. But the minute he saw what was waiting on his bed, that all changed. It was a box, a cardboard box taped up heavily, with his name scrawled in Call's father's spidery, unmistakable handwriting. Colum Hunt, the Magisterium, Luray, Virginia. For a moment, Call stood and stared. He moved slowly over to the box and touched it, running his fingers along the duct-taped seams. His father always used the same heavy tape to pack up boxes, like when he had to ship something that had been ordered from out of town. They were practically impossible to open. Call took Miri out of his belt. The knife's sharp blade tore through the cardboard as if it were a sheet of paper. Clothes spilled out onto the bed. Call's jeans, jackets, and t-shirts, packets of his favorite sour gummy candy, a wind-up alarm clock, and a copy of The Three Musketeers, which Call and his dad had been reading together. When Call picked up the book, a folded-up note fell from between the pages. Call lifted it and read,
"Callum, I know this isn't your fault. I love you and I am sorry for everything that happened. Keep your chin up at school. Affectionately, Alistair Hunt."
He had signed it with his full name, as though Call were someone he hardly even knew. Holding the letter in his hand, Call sank down onto the bed.
Chapter 11.
Call couldn't sleep that night. He was keyed up from the fight, and his mind kept going over the words of his dad's note, trying to puzzle out what they meant. It didn't help that Call had immediately eaten all but one package of the gummy candy he'd received, making him about ready to bounce off the cave roof without the need for wyvern breath to propel him. If his father had sent Call's skateboard, and it was annoying that he hadn't, he would have been careening into walls with it. His dad had written that he wasn't angry, and the words he picked didn't sound angry either. But he sounded something else. Sad. Cold, maybe. Distant. Maybe he was worried about the magicians stealing Call's mail and reading it. Maybe he was afraid of writing anything private. It was an understatement to say that his dad could be a little paranoid sometimes, especially about mages. If only Call could talk to him just for a second. He wanted to reassure his father that he was doing fine and that no one had opened the package but him. As far as he could tell, the magisterium wasn't so bad. It was even kind of fun. If only the magisterium had telephones. Call's mind went immediately to the tiny tornado on Master Rufus's desk. If Call waited to be taught how to pilot the boats to sneak back there, he might be waiting forever to talk with his father. He'd proved at the test that he could adapt his magic to many situations he hadn't been specifically trained for. Maybe he could adapt to this one, too. After so long with only the two uniforms, it was awesome to have a bunch of clothes to choose from. Part of him wanted to put them all on at once and waddle through the magisterium like a penguin. In the end, he settled for black jeans and a black t-shirt with a faded Led Zeppelin logo on it, the outfit he deemed most suitable for sneaking around. As an afterthought, he buckled Miri's sheath through a loop of his belt and ducked out through the darkened common room. Looking around, he was suddenly aware of how much his and Tamara's stuff was spread all over the place. He'd left his notebook on the counter, his bag tossed haphazardly on the couch, one of his socks on the floor beside a plate of crystalline cookies with a bite missing. Tamara had scattered even more. Books from home, hair ties, dangly earrings, pens with feathered ends, and bangle bracelets. But of Aaron, there was nothing. What little stuff he had was in his room, which he kept super clean, the bed made as tightly as if this were a military school. He could hear Tamara and Aaron's steady breathing coming from their rooms. For a moment, he wondered if he should just go back to bed. He still didn't know the tunnels very well and remembered all the warnings about getting lost. They weren't supposed to be out of their rooms this late without permission from their master either, so he was risking getting in trouble. Taking a quick breath, he pushed all doubts out of his mind. He knew the way to Master Rufus's office during the day. He just had to figure out the boats. The hall outside the common room was lit by the dim glow of rocks and had fallen utterly, eerily silent.
The quiet was punctuated only by distant drips of sediment falling from stalactite to stalagmite.
Okay, Call muttered. Here goes nothing.
He started down the path he knew led toward the river. His footsteps beat a pattern, step shuffle, in the quiet. The room the river ran through was even more dimly lit than the hall. The water was a dark, heaving rush of shadow. Carefully, Call picked his way along the rocky path to where one of the boats was tied up at the river's edge. He tried to brace himself, but his bad leg wobbled. He had to get down on his knees to crawl into the boat. Part of Master Rockmaple's lecture on elementals had covered those that could be found in the water. According to him, they were often easily persuaded by a small amount of power to do a mage's bidding. The only problem was that Master Rockmaple had talked theory, but hadn't explained any technique. Call had no idea how to do this. The boat rocked under his knees. Mimicking Master Rufus, he leaned over the edge and whispered,
"Okay. I feel really stupid doing this, but, maybe you could help me out. I'm trying to get downstream, and I don't know how to... Look, could you try to keep the boat from knocking into walls and spinning around, please?"
The elementals, wherever they were and whatever they were doing, didn't offer any response. Luckily, the current already ran in the direction he was going. Leaning out, he pushed off the riverbank with the heel of his hand, sending the boat wobbling toward the center of the river. He felt a moment of heady success before realizing he had no way to stop the boat. Recognizing there wasn't much he could do, he slumped against the seat at the stern and resigned himself to worrying about that on the other end. Water lapped against the side of the boat, and every so often a fish would rise, pale and glowing, to dart across the surface before disappearing into the depths again. Unfortunately, it didn't seem that he'd done the right thing when whispering to the elementals. The boat turned through the water, making Call dizzy. At one point, he had to shove off a stalagmite to keep the boat from running aground. Finally, he came to a riverbank he recognized, the one near Rufus's office. He looked around for some way to steer toward the shore. The idea of sticking his hand into the cold, black water didn't appeal to him much, but he did it anyway, paddling frantically. The prow bumped against the shore, and Call realized he was going to have to jump out into the shallow water since he couldn't get the boat to press itself against a ledge like Master Rufus did. Bracing himself, he stepped over the side and sank immediately in the silt. He lost his balance, falling and banging his bad leg against the side of the boat. For a long moment, the pain took his breath away. When he recovered, he realized his situation was even worse. The boat had drifted into the middle of the water, out of his reach. "Come back!" he yelled to the boat. Then, realizing his mistake, he concentrated on the water itself. Even as he strained, all he was able to do was make the water swirl a little. He'd spent a month working with sand and no time at all working with the other elements. He was soaked, and soon his boat would be gone, disappearing into a tunnel and flowing deeper into the caves. Groaning, he splashed his way onto shore. His jeans were heavy and sodden, clinging to his legs. They were also cold. He was going to have to walk all the way back like that, if he could find the way back. Pushing concerns about later out of his mind, Call headed to the heavy wood door of Master Rufus's office. Holding his breath, he tried the knob. It swung open without even a squeak. The small tornado was still spinning on Master Rufus's roll-top desk. Cole took a step toward it. The small lizard in the cage was on the workstation as before, flames flickering along its back. It watched Cole with luminous eyes.
"Let me out,"
the lizard said. It had a whispery, croaking voice, but the words had been clear. Cole stared at it in confusion. The wyverns hadn't spoken during the exercise. No one had said a single thing about elementals talking. Maybe fire elementals were different.
"Let me out,"
it said again.
"The key. I will tell you where he keeps the key, and you will let me out."
"I'm not going to do that," Cole told the lizard, frowning. He still couldn't quite get over the fact that it talked. Backing away from it, he moved closer to the tornado on the desktop. "Alistair Hunt," he whispered to the spinning sand. Nothing happened. Maybe it wasn't going to be as easy as he'd hoped. Cole put his hand to the side of the glass. As hard as he could, he pictured his father. He pictured his father's beaky profile, and the familiar sound of him repairing things in the garage. He pictured his dad's gray eyes, and the way his voice rose when he was cheering on a sports team, or lowered if he was talking about dangerous things, like magicians. He pictured the way his father had always read him to sleep with a book, and how his woolly jacket smelled like pipe smoke and wood cleaner. "Alistair Hunt," he said again, and this time the spinning sand contracted and solidified. In seconds, he was looking at the figure of his father, his glasses pushed up on his head. He was wearing a sweatshirt and jeans and had a book open on his lap. It was as if Cole had just walked in on him reading. Abruptly, his father stood up, looking in his direction. The book slid away, vanishing from view. "Cole?" his father asked, disbelief tinging his voice. "Yes," Cole said excitedly. "It's me. I got the clothes and your letter, and I wanted to find some way to contact you."
"Ah,"
said his father, squinting as though he was trying to see Cole better.
"Well, that's good. That's really good. I'm glad your things made it."
Cole nodded. Something about his father's cautious tone took the edge off the pleasure he felt at seeing him. Cole's father pushed his glasses higher on his nose.
"You look well."
Cole looked down at his clothes. "Yeah, I'm okay. It's really not so bad here. I mean, it can be boring sometimes, and scary other times, but I'm learning stuff. I'm not such a bad mage. I mean, so far."
"I never thought that you would be unskilled, Cole."
His father stood up and seemed to move toward where Cole was standing. His expression was strange, as though he was steeling himself to some difficult task.
"Where are you?
Does anyone know you're speaking with me?" Cole shook his head. "I'm in Master Rufus's office. I'm, borrowing his miniature tornado."
"His what?"
Cole's father's brows knitted in confusion. Then he sighed.
"Never mind. I'm glad to have a chance to remind you of what's important. The mages aren't what they seem. The magic they're teaching you is dangerous. The more you learn about the magical world, the more you will be drawn into it, drawn into its old conflicts and dangerous temptations. Whatever fun you're having."
Cole's father said the word fun like it was poisonous.
"Whatever friends you're making, don't forget that this life isn't the life for you. You must get away as soon as you can."
"Are you telling me to run?"
"It would be the best thing for everyone,"
Alistair said with perfect sincerity. But what if I decide I want to stay here? Call asked. What if I decide I'm happy at the Magisterium? Will you still let me come home, sometimes?
There was a silence. The question hung in the air between them. Even if he was a magician, he still wanted to be Alistair's son, too. His father took a deep breath.
I know you hate the Magisterium because Mom died in the cold massacre. Call spoke rapidly, trying to get the words out before his courage failed.
What?
Alistair's eyes went wide. He looked furious and afraid. And I get why you never told me about it. I'm not mad. But that was war. They have a truce now. Nothing's going to happen to me here in the—
Call!
Alistair barked. His face was pale.
You absolutely cannot stay at the school. You don't understand. It's too dangerous. Call, you must listen to me. You don't know what you are.
Call was cut off by a crashing noise behind him. He spun around to see that the lizard had somehow managed to knock its cage off the edge of the workstation. It was lying on its side on the floor, covered by a flurry of papers and the remains of one of Rufus's models. From inside, the elemental was muttering weird words like
Splurg and Gilferfren.
Call spun back to the tornado, but it was too late. His concentration had been broken. His father had vanished, his last words hanging in the air.
You don't know what you are!
You stupid lizard! Call yelled, kicking one leg of the workstation. More papers slipped onto the floor. The elemental went quiet. Call fell back into Rufus's chair, putting his head in his hands. What had his father been saying? What could he have meant?
Call, you must listen to me. You don't know what you are.
A shiver went down Call's spine.
Let me out,
repeated the lizard. No, Call yelled, glad to have a target for his rage. No, I'm not going to let you out, so just stop asking. The lizard watched beadily from its cage as Call knelt down and began to pick up papers and gears from the model. Reaching for an envelope, Call's fingers closed on a small package that must have also been knocked off the table. He pulled it toward him, when he noticed his father's unmistakable spidery handwriting yet again. It was addressed to William Rufus.
Oh, Call thought. A letter from Dad. That can't be good.
Should he open it? The last thing he needed was his father saying crazy things to Master Rufus and begging for Call to be sent home. Besides, Call was already going to be in trouble for sneaking around. So maybe he couldn't get in much more trouble for opening mail. He cut the tape free with the jagged edge of a gear and unfolded a note very like the one he had received. It read,
Rufus, if ever you trusted me, if ever you felt any loyalty to me for my time as your student and for the tragedy we shared, you must bind Colum's magic before the end of the year. Alistair.
Chapter 12.
For a long moment, Call was so angry that he wanted to smash something, and at the same time, his eyes burned like he was about to cry. Trying to hold back his temper, Call pulled out the object that had been tucked into the package beneath his father's letter. It was the wristband of an older, silver-year student, studded with 5 stones. One red, one green, one blue, one white, and one as black as the pools of dark water that ran through the caves. He stared at it. Was it his father's bracelet from the time he'd been in the Magisterium? Why would Alistair send that to Rufus? One thing is for sure, Call thought. Master Rufus is never going to get this message. He jammed the letter and envelope into his pocket and clapped the wristband around his wrist. It was too big on him, so he pushed it high up his arm, above his own cuff, and tugged his sleeve down over it.
"You're stealing," said the lizard.
The flames still burned along its back, blue with flashes of green and yellow. They made shadows dance along the walls. Call stopped cold.
"So what?" "Let me out,"
the lizard said.
"Let me out, or I'll tell that you stole Master Rufus's things."
Call groaned. He hadn't been thinking straight. Not only did the elemental know he'd opened the package, but it also knew what he'd said to his dad. It had heard his father's cryptic warning. Call couldn't let it repeat those things to Master Rufus. He knelt down and lifted the cage by the iron handle on its top, setting it back on Rufus's work table. He looked at the lizard more closely. Its body was longer than one of his father's boots. It looked a little like a miniature version of a Komodo dragon. It even had a beard of scales and eyebrows. Yeah, it definitely had eyebrows. Its eyes were big and red, glowing steadily like embers in a fire. The whole cage smelled vaguely of sulfur.
"Sneaking," said the lizard. "You're sneaking, stealing, and your father wants you to run away."
Cole didn't know what to do. If he let the elemental out of its cage, it could still tell Master Rufus what it had seen. He couldn't risk being discovered. He didn't want to get his magic bound. He didn't want to let down Aaron and Tamara, not when they'd just started to be friends. "Yep," Cole said. "And guess what else I'm stealing?"
"You."
With a last look around the office, Cole left, carrying the lizard's cage with him. The elemental ran back and forth inside, causing the cage to rattle. Cole didn't care. He walked down to the water, hoping a new boat might have drifted by. There was nothing but the underground river lapping at a stony beach. Cole wondered if he could swim back. But the water was icy cold, the current was running in the wrong direction, and he'd never been the strongest swimmer. Plus, he had the lizard to think about, and he doubted its cage would float.
"The currents of the Magisterium are dark and strange," said the elemental, its red eyes glowing bright in the gloom.
Cole tilted his head, studying the creature.
"Do you have a name?" "Only the name you give me," said the lizard.
"Stonehead?" Cole suggested, looking at the crystal rocks on the lizard's head. A puff of smoke came from the lizard's ears. It looked annoyed. "You said I should name you," Cole reminded it, squatting down on the bank with a sigh. The lizard's head squeezed between the bars. Its tongue shot out to curl around a tiny fish and pull it back between its jaws. It crunched away with disturbing satisfaction. This had happened so fast that Cole jumped, nearly dropping the cage. That tongue was scary.
"Fireback?"
he suggested, standing, pretending he wasn't freaked out. "Fish face?" The lizard ignored him.
"Warren?"
Cole suggested. It was the name of one of the guys who sometimes came by to play poker with Call's father on Sunday nights. The lizard nodded in satisfaction.
"Warren,"
it said.
"Warrens are there, under the earth, where creatures dwell. Warrens to sneak and spy and hole up tight."
Great, Call said, thoroughly unnerved.
There are other ways than the river. You don't know the way back to your nest. But I do.
Cole regarded the elemental, who looked up at him through the stone bars of its cage in return.
A shortcut back to my room?